Welcome to the Cashflow Ninja, the podcast sharing how to create and grow income streams and manage, multiply, and protect your wealth in the new economy. Are you tired of trading your time for money? Do you desire freedom today instead of retirement in 10, 20, or 30 years? I'm MC Lobsher, and this is the Cashflow Ninja.
Hello, Cashflow Ninjas. MC Lobsher here, and welcome to another episode of the Cashflow Ninja. I have a great show for you today. In today's show, we're going to look at insights on massive economic and market shifts that will provide enormous opportunities for investors in the next decade. My guest on this episode is Lior Gantz. Lior is the editor of Wealth Research Group. Lior has built and runs numerous successful businesses and has traveled to over 30 countries in the past decade in pursuit of thrills and opportunities, gaining valuable knowledge and experience along the way. He is an advocate of meticulous risk management, balanced asset allocation, and proper position sizing. As a deep value investor, Lior loves researching businesses that are off the radar and completely unknown to most financial publications. If you've not checked out my new show, Cashflow Investing Secrets, I would highly recommend it. It's a shorter show, 10 minutes or less, where I share one idea and or concept at a time, what I've learned from interviewing over 500 Cashflow Ninjas. You can listen to the show on your favorite podcast, video, and live streaming platforms. We also have an investment group and community for accredited investors. If you're interested to join the group, please visit CashflowNinjaInvestorsNetwork.com. And you can also stay up to date with everything Cashflow Ninja by joining us on our Facebook group. Just go to Facebook and type in Cashflow Ninja Community, and you'll find us on Facebook. My friend Brian Page has created a cash flow machine generating over $100,000 in 6 months without owning any real estate. His system consists out of renting properties from property owners and renting them out on Airbnb. His system is so simplistic, it can be managed by virtual assistants and yet so effective and powerful that it predictably generates cash flow every month. Brian and I are hosting a webinar where he shares his system and how it generated over $100,000 in 6 months for him personally. You can access this life-changing webinar at cashflowninja.com/BNB. This is one of the greatest cash flow opportunities I've seen since I've started my podcast. Again, the URL is cashflowninja.com/BNB. Lior, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, always enjoy our conversations. And it's always great to talk to you and to let you make sense of this crazy world that we live in to all of the Cashflow Ninja listeners. For some of our listeners that's not familiar with you and what you do, can you please share just a little bit about your background and your journey and what you do?
Yeah, definitely. I think the pivotal moment in my life happened when I was 13, and I had to start working. Basically, my father's business went under, and we reached a point where neither him or my mother couldn't afford to give me allowance, anything. So here I am, 13. I want to buy stuff. I want to do stuff. I want to go out with friends. And I can't do anything. So I started babysitting, coaching basketballs, painting decks. At age 16, I started delivering pizzas and sushi and whatever. And I saved up. I was that kid that is unlike the other children. I had like a bank account and everything like that. And my grandfather gave me an investing book. And that got me started at age 16 and investing in entrepreneurship. I actually got my parents to sign a waiver that I can invest in stocks as a minor. And my life took on a path that I never looked back on. So I have high school education, but between the ages of 16 and 17, I read 100 books. So that's 3 books a day. I was in high school. The book that we actually use in class, inside of it, I would put my own books, and I just learned everything I can about entrepreneurship and investing. And I've been on this trajectory of one book a month from the age of 18 about until the age of 25, and then one book a week since then. So I think the pivotal moment in my life was when I started reading books. And 3.5 years ago, I said, look, let me take all of this, everything that I do in terms of the amount of time that I spend reading books and reading information and analyzing, and create a free newsletter that basically takes all this out and trickles just the most important stuff, because a book, you know, it's 300 something pages. How can I take it and recap it to a point where someone who's a reader and he's got a, you know, a full-time job, family, and everything else can tap into what I like to think about in macroeconomics, and also what I'm doing with my own portfolio, with my own money. So that's where wealthresearchgroup.com was birthed. And if you go to the website and you click on the top menu, you'll see the special reports page. And that's a lot of special report download PDFs about all of these topics that I just love researching and I constantly show myself with.
One of the things that you're talking quite a bit that I'm interested to hear a little bit more, and I want you to share with our listeners, is you talk about a trickle effect, because we've all heard about trickle down politics, or rather economics, and the trickle down effect of all the stimulus and money printing in the economy. What can you share around that with our listeners?
Yeah. So, you know, I gave a number of interviews about a month ago, and I used this analogy, and it went viral. And the idea is this: if you can imagine what has happened since 2008, think of a high rise, a building that has many stories, and on the penthouse there's a bombing party. It's amazing. There's a DJ, there's free alcohol, food, everyone is dressed up beautifully, and they're having a great time. But this is just 10% of the population that's up there. The rest can see the fireworks, they can see the amazing light and artwork and everything, but they're at the bottom floor, they're at the lobby. They can probably hear the music a little bit, but they can't understand who's up there and what they're doing and how much fun is it. And they are just understanding that they were not invited to the party. That's how they feel. The elevators, they don't work. You cannot get to that floor. And the DJ just keeps on running great tune after great tune after great tune. The DJ being analogous to the Federal Reserve that keeps lowering the borrowing costs for these corporations, for the wealthy individuals, and for the government, so they can party on, while at the bottom floor, 90%, 80 to 90% of the population are there, and they actually fund the party, because that's their taxpayers' money that funds this, and deficits, so that their children and their children's children, etc. But they are not part of the fun. Now, when the DJ started the party, he said, look, the party, you'll hear the music no matter where you are. You'll enjoy this thing. This was the trickle effect that the Federal Reserve promised. What the theory was is that the government will borrow money at very low rates. Corporations will borrow money at very low rates. They will turn around, invest in capital expenditures. Your wages will go up. You'll get back to work and all of this good stuff. The magic will trickle down from Wall Street to Main Street. This was the mantra. But it did not happen. By 2011, 3 years after the crisis, all of these people got back to their net worth pre-crisis. So for them, 3 years, it was over. In 2016, most Americans said they were not back to their pre-2008 level. 8 million families were transitions from middle class to millionaires. So family units from 2008 till today, a massive creation of wealth for the already wealthy. Many billionaires became multi-billionaires, etc. But for the average person who was not invited to this party, what he wants is for either the DJ to be replaced or for someone up there to punch a hole in the floor so that the music can trickle down, so to speak. And that's what the government will probably be doing. This is the This is the next stage. This is the populist movement at the bottom floor. They're like, we also want to be part of this party. Or close the party and let's discuss, you know, what everyone can do here together. That's what a lot of billionaires are saying, that we have capitalism, but not inclusive capitalism. In other words, there's a party and the party is amazing, but only 10% are enjoying the party and the 90% are really not enjoying it that much. If that's the best analogy of what has happened in the past 10 years. And the reason it happened is because only the DJ selected the music and the venue. And what I mean by that is central banks dominated with monetary policy. The government, under Obama mostly, did not come in and say, hey, what can we do on the fiscal side? Trump, for example, he deregulated. That brought a lot of people back into the middle class because it made businesses hiring easily, lower the cost of opening businesses, he created opportunity zones where corporations can go into these areas where they will not pay taxes for a few years. He cut corporate taxes that brought billions back to the states. He brought manufacturing. He did a lot of stuff that's proactive. You know, we can debate whether or not they're good or not, but it was proactive. And that's what I think the government is going to be demanded to do by the people more and more in the coming decade. I think we will see much more government stimulus than central bank stimulus. You can already see this because all the central banks are telling you, we have exhausted the policies that we can do. What else do you want us to do? We've been doing the same routine since 2008, right, lowering interest rates and pumping, and lowering the borrowing cost and suppressing interest rate. This is 2008 mentality, but we're in 2019. We need to do things otherwise, differently, if we don't want what we have. And what do we have? In 2019, what we have is a very expensive world. In other words, there are bubbles. You know, we have bubbles. The treasury, the bonds that the treasury holds are a bubble. But most of the world is just expensive. Stock expensive, but they're not in a bubble. If you ask, you know, hedge fund managers, they're underinvested. They're much more in cash than they used to be. The biggest buyer of stocks in the past 11 years have been the corporations themselves. So, and the average person was not buying over this bull market. In fact, it's been called the most hated bull market for a reason. And real estate is expensive. It's not in a bubble, but it's expensive. Bonds are crazy expensive. Yeah. The lower the yield, the more expensive the bond. So assets are expensive, and that's because if the DJ keeps, you know, putting on more and more music, in other words, if he allows corporations and governments and individuals to borrow more and more money, they buy assets off of each other. So this guy buys stocks for this one, buys real estate from this one, etc., and you inflate all the asset prices. What has not been inflated that much? If you look at oil, you know, if the consumer was strong, oil would be more expensive. It's not. It's really, you know, it's cheap. It's good. Most of your items in the supermarkets, I've been to 25 countries in the past 18 months, and I do my own shopping, grocery shopping. You know, stuff is more expensive than before. It's certainly not inflated, right? You can really, if you want to, you can buy food at a good price. But if you look at asset prices, expensive. If you look at the amount of innovation that you have in one iPhone, on one in a technology product, you'd say, amazing. That's an incredible price for value. If you and I were just to put in storage the amount of data that we've consumed this year, if we had to put it in cassettes or CDs at the house, we wouldn't have enough room. So we live in a very efficient world, the fact that it's efficient is not so much of a help for countries who are not prepared for the 21st century. America has a 50-year low in unemployment. That's true. So a lot of people are employed. A record number of people are employed. The career paths are dead ends. It's not a corporate ladder anymore. It's not something where you can say, hey, I'll come into this company at $5 an hour. I don't care. Because in 1 year I'll be 20, and then in 2 years I'll be 40, then I'll be $100 an hour. it's not like that. Most jobs are service oriented. They have, you cannot just jump into executive level, and the U.S. has a real problem. The baby boom miracle, where you have plentiful high-paying jobs, is over. But I don't think America has yet realized it and start to change its mindset and its trajectory for the 21st century. And that's where I think we're at. We're at a point where the next crisis will prove now everything is great. But once the jobs that most people have, corporations can let them go, can sack them easily. These are not, for the most part, except for the high-level jobs, the executive, the mid-level, and the high-level, a lot of people are expendable, quote-unquote. And I think that's where the problems will start. That's where you'll see a lot of what I call extreme policies. And I think that America is lost, and you can, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, because you're in America much more than I am. It has lost the love of failure. When I was a kid, when I failed, I had to figure it out. And up until today, if I fail, I don't look at whoever the minister for finance or whatever is. I look to see what I can do to improve. First line, I think in America, people that fail just look to blame. It's not just in America, but everywhere else. They look to the government far too fast and far too much. And I think that they will continue to get a lot of government in return. And that's where these different state of minds, the capitalists and the socialists, will collide.
Yeah. No, I agree with you that the majority of folks, and this is globally, the majority of people are stuck into that, the mindset of, because they're still drinking the Kool-Aid, right? As you mentioned, the world has changed from a jobs economy to a skills economy. It's globally, right? The jobs economy, like you said, you go to school, you get good grades, you go to college, you study more, maybe you go and get a master's degree, and then you climb the corporate ladder. You know, you get one job after another job, and, you know, you stack away your money in 401ks, and, you know, there's pensions, and, hey, by the way, you buy that house too. You know, so you have equity, all that kind of stuff. If you break it down step by step, is one of the things that I see too globally and in the U.S. keeping people at the bottom floor of that party, right? Because think about it this way: so if you're young, let's just start, and there's a massive population of young folks globally, and these are the folks getting angry. So why are they angry? Because they took on massive student loan debts. So now, you know, you talk about wealth inequality. A big thing about the wealth inequality is, how does someone climb up the floors in this nightclub, using your analogy, if you start like 100 to 150 grand in debt and you wasted 4 years learning skills that are not applicable to the current economy? Now you're like, how do I get to the next floor? I'm stuck. And
I think that's the big difference between this generation and what it needs to face and other generations. You know, jobs, salaries peak. So that's not new. If you're 20, you should not expect to receive the same salary as someone with 20 years of experience and he's 40, 40, 45 and knows what he's doing. So salaries have always been on a trajectory. That's fine. Same with equity, right? You're 20, you start to buy stocks. By the time you're 40, you're compounding faster. So that's not new. What is new is what you're introducing. I don't have a problem with the fact that if you've been in this race for 30 years, you're richer than the average 20-year-old. I have a problem with the fact that a 20-year-old starts the race not at the bottom floor, but four levels down at the parking lot, and that's where people are, because they don't even see the lobby. They're down there with no sun. And that's the problem. That's what they're saying. They're saying, hey, I in my lifetime, I will never be able to climb from -5 to those upper floors. And that's my issue. My father could. He was in the lobby. All he had to do was take the elevator and do some stuff right. And the reason that this is all this has happened, because the power of leverage worked for this generation, and now it's working counterproductive to the rest of them, to all the people that are coming behind them. That's a problem, because if you want to be a political, basically commit political suicide, then you start owning up to these people that promised unfunded liabilities that grow the deficits every year. And you're talking about growing the deficits in record expense. So what will happen in a downturn when tax receipts go down and all that kind of stuff? So I think that's the major problem. And when you got a powerhouse like the U.S. that generates about a quarter of the world's economic activity, and they are mismanaged, they're going to sneeze and the world is going to be sick. That's for sure. There's no way for the world's number one economy to have a downturn with so much debt already in the system, and for the rest of the world not to have a trickle effect. That's where you're going to see a trickle effect. When the U.S. Goes down for their next slowdown, doesn't even have to be a recession. Just has to be a slowdown, a period of 1 year to one, where all the corporations take it easy, sack people, invest less, don't make any big moves. Money is going to be pulled from the markets, and you're going to see people from around the world suffering. And I think people just don't have the savings power that they did before. I think people now are far too trusting that the people in the big buildings know what they're doing. 2008 proved to the world that Wall Street is not the capital of is not the right capital of finance. So we're already in this analogy that I present. I call it a dysfunctional marriage between the West and the East. Everyone knows that the dollar is not the right solution. So everyone knows this marriage is dysfunctional, but everyone's more afraid of being single again, of the divorce. Where am I going to find a new wife? How is she? It's the devil you know and versus the devil you don't know. So that's why the dollar is still the global standard. Not because it's functioning amazingly. Everybody knows it's not. But there's still not a different solution. That doesn't mean that there won't be friction in this marriage, and that somebody won't threaten divorce. And that's what I'm saying. That's basically the entire point of wealth research. Growing wealth is a matter of just finding the next opportunity. No, you can find yourself in a spot where you're building a great real estate project, but the bank calls you and he wants to pull your funding because there's a crisis all over the world. So you need to have partners, and you need to have multiple streams of income. You need to be much more sophisticated than ever before. This is not the agricultural era. This is the thinking era. We are in a thinking century. People that think will prosper, and people that do will just tag along for the ride and live in somebody else's script. That's the harsh way to say it, but it's true.
You're listening to The Cashflow Ninja, the show helping people all over the world create monthly cash flow and achieve freedom today, not in 10, 20, 30, and or 40 years. This is the show where cash is not king, but cash flow is king. We will be right back after a word from our sponsors. My friend Dave Zook from The Real Asset Investor says, you can be conventional or you can be wealthy. Pick one. The Real Asset Investor team creates value for investors looking for higher yield returns from ATM machines and self-storage investments. Their syndications offer attractive investment opportunities that produce strong cash flow, equity growth, huge tax incentives. They are truly passive and managed by a world-class team. To learn more about the exciting investment opportunities The Real Asset Investor offers, such as their ATM and self-storage syndications, please visit cashflowninja.com/realassetinvestor. MC Lobshire, the creator of the Cashflow Ninja and Cashflow Coach at Producers Wealth, where we help our clients integrate infinite banking with their business and investments. To learn how you can create your own banking system to turbocharge your investments and business in 30 days or less, go to yourownbankingsystem.com.
yourownbankingsystem.com. That's yourownbankingsystem.com.
You're listening to the Cashflow Ninja, the show helping people all over the world create monthly cash flow and achieve freedom today, not in 10, 20, 30, and or 40 years. This is the show where cash is not king, but cash flow is king. Now let's return to our interview.
And that brings me to the positive side, because the negative side is, you know, what's happening to a lot of folks and the situation that they find themselves in with a certain mindset. But as you just mentioned, on the other side, the opposite side of the coin is that we are living in one of the most amazing times ever with the most amount of abundance. And there's a smaller group of folks that, again, like you, they're thinking, they're seeing what's out there, they're leveraging technologies and all this stuff. I mean, I talk to a lot of folks. It is amazing the wealth that very young folks, I'm talking 22-year-olds. There's a 22-year-old that I got into contact that created this Amazon business. I mean, talk about a cash flow ninja. It's 22 years old. So instead of being negative about all these things, and he had student loans, by the way, too. Instead of being negative with all this kind of stuff, you know, he looked at the opportunities that was out there, capitalized on a trend, for example, the online retail trend, which in the U.S. still only 10% of stuff is sold online. A lot of people are already saying, well, that's gone. I missed the boat. No. That's just starting. So this particular individual, young, had some student debt, but looked around what was going on in the world, realized that he was sold a bill of goods that wasn't exactly applicable to his situation, but he studied, he looked what was going on, he capitalized on a trend, and he's built this business for himself. And there's many people like that that are doing that, because if you apply yourself and live intentionally, not just go along and do what everyone else is doing, but intentionally live a life with strategies and by design, I mean, the sky's the limit. You and I, by the way, talking to each other through Zoom, you know, which is, I always joke, and I don't know, I follow a number of folks, but this one gentleman was saying that how ridiculous it is that we have Star Trek technology. People are like, what do you mean? He's like, remember the Starship Enterprise or whatever it was called?
Yeah.
You know, they had this video screen and bloop, someone would pop up and talk to each other. We have that right now. You and I are basically talking through Star Trek technology, and it's free.
Yeah.
It's free. Think about that. So there's a world. That's the other side of it, is that there's a world of abundance of folks, and there are folks applying themselves, but the majority still are stuck in this mindset, and there's no one that's going to pull you out of that besides yourself, right?
Yeah. A couple of months ago when I was in Miami, and the Uber driver, I was asking how's things in Miami and how's the economy doing and all that. So he said it's very hard to live in a big city. He says, I have a lot of rich people that take my Uber and I talk to them, etc. And I told him, look, the world that we live in, this have and haves not world, is also an opportunity for you, because you have to realize that even if you are part of the have-nots, it's true that in America, you can't climb a corporate ladder that fast anymore and just, you know, double your income every year, etc., as a wage employee. But you can't even understand the amount of money that is chasing good ideas. So if you're an Uber driver and you are, or whatever else you do, that's your day job. But you're keep your eyes open, because you have two eyes. Everything you see around you is an opportunity. There isn't one industry that has peaked, in innovation, in efficiency, effectiveness, or anything else. And all you need is a good idea, a good business plan. You can find money. So in other words, it's true that you cannot rise up the ladder that fast, but you can attach yourself to money. And right now, it's the easiest time to find hedge funds with private equity, with hard money. There are so many ways. The bottom line You know, if you think about somebody who's training on his own compared to training in a group, you're always going to have better results when you're, you know, when you have another person to be accountable to. Even Da Vinci and all these painters and sculptors, that it's a very solo solo profession, right?
Yeah.
They all had helpers. Beyonce, the greatest singer, whatever. She has a vocal coach, and she has a nobody does it on their own. Nobody can do it. And if you partner up, that's the greatest thing you can do in business for, as your first step. Then start, you know, start to meet on an everyday basis and figure this out. Say, what can I do? What are we seeing with our own eyes? Where are there problems? Where are people saying this is it can be with anything. And then look for money. And that's, you know, money is the least of your worries if you have a good idea and a good partner. And then, you know, capitalize from there. I think that we live in a world with a lot of opportunities. If this was 30 years ago or 40 years ago, America would be in a much bigger plight, a much bigger jam, because you see all these jobs going out and they're not going back in. The manufacturing jobs cannot go back into the U.S. It's just, there's an arbitrage in wages worldwide, etc. We live in a global world. You can be, you know, it's not even in the U.S. or Apple world, and you need to think about it in a global world. You may reside in somewhere in the United States. It doesn't mean that your business have to be local. So if the local economy is doing bad, it doesn't mean that you have to do bad, etc. I think there's an incredible amount of opportunity, but the fun days are over, and that's my big message. The fun days are over. In my 20s, I didn't have 20s. I worked 7 days a week, 10 hours a day until I got my blowout moment. Seriously, my wife and I joked that we saw each other in bed. That's the only time we saw each other. So, I didn't see anything except, you know, psych myself up that I need to find these opportunities. I was in that plight as well. I was in that, area as well. And it didn't matter the amount of books that I read and all that. Opportunity is fleet of foot. And, there's so many people that are chasing opportunities that all you can do is increase your skills, and then something comes along, and you're ready for it. But if I would have stopped at any point, it would have been gone, and that knowledge, that is potential power, would have stayed in that realm of potential. There wasn't an avenue to release it. I think, you know, that's kind of where people's minds should be at right now.
So many great points. One of the things that I just want to reiterate what you just said is that's another reason, by the way, for wealth inequality, if you want to look at it, because if people know what it took to be successful and to obtain a certain level of success, the hours that go into that afterwards, they just see, you know, most people just see on the surface level, oh, that person's doing well, or that person's having a good life, or that person's built this business.
Yeah.
It's hours upon hours upon heartbreaks and failures and constant that kind of stuff. So it's not for everyone. And that's why, unfortunately, you have what you have in the world. And the other thing that I'd also say about the opportunities, you know, this is why the United States is such a great place. Everything, think about everything that you do not want to do and write it down. There's a business opportunity in that. Because in the United States, if I just think about, I mean, landscaping service, there's a lot of folks that they don't want to do gardening or cut their own grass.
Yeah.
There's someone that has a business doing very, very well in your community doing that exact thing. I mean, just the list goes on about stuff that people don't want to do. So there's think about it. If you're young, that's what I would do. And even ask your parents, you know, if you're in your early 20s or your friends, what do they hate to do? And trust me, there might be some gold just in that question. Question for you regarding, I mean, we have to talk about it. We've touched a little bit on populism. We've touched a little bit for the reasons why there's a lot of different experiences, let me put it that way, in this global economy all over the world. There's a rise in populism because of all of these things. And then, of course, I mean, Lira, it really feels like every single year there's an election. every single year, it doesn't stop. The election cycle doesn't stop. And it's not just the U.S. It's everywhere. There's just one election after another. And here we find ourselves again in another election cycle in the United States. Some thoughts on President Trump, some thoughts on the elections in the U.S. and globally, and how this affects actually the economy, markets, and affects people at, you know, where they are.
I think what Trump did that's different than any other president is the day he got elected, he started to raise money again. So I think he has over $160 million already pledged. Well, all these Democrats have like two or three million. That's why he has 75 times the capital they have to spend on their campaigns. And I think that's one thing that he did brilliantly to his credit. He started campaigning again the day he got elected. Nobody did that up until now. He's basically invented Twitter for presidents. And I think if there isn't any economic calamity in the U.S. and from now to the elections, he'll win. And he'll win in the most divided elections ever. So he'll win with less than half of the country wanting him, but it's just going to happen that way. And I think what you'll get is more of what you've seen, but I think his big one, if he wins, will be the national debt and how he can ease that burden from the U.S. He'll try to refinance it for 50 years or 100 years and roll a lot of debt over so he can so the United States doesn't have to default on its promises to its own citizens, definitely not to the foreign creditors, but not even to its own citizens by postponing the retirement age or introducing some new restrictions where you'd have to, be employed in order to receive your Social Security, all that kind of politically very hard to do. So I think that's, unless there's any economic calamity, I think it'll win. What I think is more important is what it'll do with China. If there's a China deal, even a light deal that paves the way or a skinny deal as they call it, and they pave the way to a bigger deal, the China doesn't have the need to hoard trillions of U.S. dollars because there is no trade deficit anymore. There is no problem anymore like there is right now for the past 30 years where there's a growing trade deficit because they have a huge amount of dollars. And I think that is very bad for the U.S. dollar. Many other countries will feel the same way. If we can strike a deal with the U.S., we don't need to hold the reserves in U.S. Dollars that much. We can use other reserves. We can use gold. And I think there will be an unwinding of these huge treasury holdings that most central banks have and hold their position of U.S. dollars. I think the U.S. dollar this decade is going to come under a lot of weakness. So a lot of selling pressure. The dollar index is right now at an all-time high. So it had a tremendous decade. The U.S. has been by far the best economy out of the Great Recession. And I think it can go down by 25 to 30% in the next 5 to 7 to 8 to 10 years, whatever. It's a huge number, no matter if it's in 5 years or 10 years. And that will play into inflation. That will cause some commodities to be more expensive. And that usually is not good for stocks. If CEOs can't plan the future because they don't know what the price of stuff will be, they tend to hold back on big plans. Shareholders don't like that, so stocks tend to be very flat in inflationary times. And I think that's coming. I don't know if it's coming in a day or two or in a month or two. But once there's a trade deal announced, then I think that will be the peak for the U.S. dollar. It's been in a bull market for almost 10 years now, since 2011 would be the bottom for the dollar. So going on 9 years now, it's a very long cycle for the U.S. dollar. And I think that is my big overarching trend for the next decade. A U.S. dollar bear market is a tremendous force in the global economy, no matter who's president. And then I think what's also important in the coming decade is that the millennial generation is going to start unwinding its these debts that it has. So they're going to move from that parking lot to the lobby. And once they're in the lobby, then they'll open their eyes and they'll start getting married, because most of them are not married. So they'll want to start getting out of the city and into the suburbs. They'll want to build homes, you know, they have children, etc. I think the U.S. economy has a lot of potential organically to grow, because there's going to be a lot of consumption, and millennials are going to inherit these high-paying jobs that right now the boomers or the generation between the boomers and the millennials currently have. So I think organically the U.S. is in a nice spot in terms of what they can do internally. But outside of that, the perimeter, a U.S. dollar bear market is going to shape the investment world in the coming decade. And that's we discuss all of that in the newsletter. And if you go to wealthresearchgroup.com/reset, we talk about that in that special report, and also at wealthresearchgroup.com/bear, which is 11 strategies that I use on how to prepare for the bear market and the slowdown.
Fantastic. Well, Lior, this, as always, has been a blast having you on. Great to get together again before the end of the year so that folks can dive into some of these materials over the holidays to set them up and prepare for 2020. It's going to be an interesting it's going to be an interesting year and another interesting decade. If you just want to tell folks again where they can follow you, where they can reach out to you guys, and where they can access all of these reports that you guys have.
WealthResearchGroup.com is the website. You'll see a banner right when you hit the page where you can subscribe to the free letter. Free letter goes out 3 times a week. And it talks about the highest priority macroeconomic stuff. And about once a month, we actually detail an opportunity that I've personally invested in or that I'm looking at right now. Just this year, we profiled, for example, SolarEdge, which has gone up more than 100% since the 2018 December. We profiled some blue chip companies like Target, that is, if I'm not mistaken, it's the number 3 best performing stock on the S&P 500 this year, with more than 100% as well. So we merge all this, and also we talk about speculations. So these are small cap companies that have tremendous potential as well. It's a myriad of stuff, and I don't think there's another newsletter that is able to congest all this information.
Awesome. Well, great to connect, my friend, again, and thank you so much for coming on the show and providing so much value for my listeners.
Thank you very much for having me.
Life settlement investments have allowed financial and banking institutions to not only buy their equity contractually, but also diversify their capital from any economic, market, and geopolitical risk. It's been part of the $1 billion blueprint, followed by institutional investors. And if you're an accredited investor, you can also now participate in this vehicle with enormous growth potential. You can watch an informational webinar presented by one of the premier organizations providing life settlement investments, Penumbra Solutions, at cashflowninja.com/life settlements.
Thank you again for joining me on the Cashflow Ninja. If you like what you hear and appreciate what we're trying to build here, please subscribe, rate, and write a review for our show on iTunes, and share our show with family, friends, and your network. If you're not a subscriber to our newsletter, you can sign up for our newsletter at cashflowninja.com. I want to thank you for spending your most precious resource with me today, your time. Until next time, my friend, live a life of passion and purpose on your terms. presentation is for educational and informational purposes only. The information being presented and considered does not consider your particular financial objectives or situation, and it does not make personalized recommendations. This material is not intended to replace the advice of a qualified tax and legal advisor or other qualified professionals, and you should not use the information in place of a customized consultation with a licensed professional regarding your specific personal financial objectives, situation, and needs. We believe the information provided is reliable, but we do not guarantee its accuracy, timeliness, or completeness.